Thank you. You can tell people don't know me too well because they think I love people. I'm like, ooh. No, just kidding. I do love people. I love David. No, I'm just like, I'm a little mean. I get in trouble all the time for being mean. And then sometimes I try to be funny, but it just comes off as mean anyway. So I'm sorry. This morning, a good chunk of our time, I'm just going to share a little bit about my testimony, my journey, how I got here. But before we do that, I have an activity for us. And so I don't know if I told you guys, I did industrial engineering. And actually, after I graduated, I was kind of like a healthcare consultant slash coach. And so we would run this activity to like help doctors and nurses and medical assistants work together. It's kind of famous. So you might have done it before. It's called the Marshmallow Challenge. And when I say the Marshmallow Challenge, people are like, oh, like Chubby Bunny? I've played Chubby Bunny before. And like, no, not that one. Or like, oh, the one where you put the marshmallow in front of the kid? Like, no, not that one either. We're going to build a tower. There's different materials you guys have. And so I'm going to share the instructions real quick. And then afterwards, we're going to spend a little bit of time. My hope is that like as we start off the morning, it'll be a little bit more engaging as you have an activity to do. It'll be a little bit more fun. There's a prize, right? All good activities require a prize. And so on the way here, we stopped by a prestigious gas station to pick up some snacks for the winning team. And so what we're going to do is after I give the instructions, you can form your team. Your team should be around five people. Less than five is okay. More than five is not so great. Ideally, people in your life group, people who you probably know or maybe don't know well, but you're at least in the same life group with. If you're not a part of a life group, you can join the group of whoever invited you. And so you're going to get into teams of about five, and here are the instructions. And it's funny, this activity, they run it a lot. If you guys like TEDx and stuff, there's a TEDx video about it too. And most of the time what they find is that kindergartners do better than most adults. Most adults. When they do it with college students, they find that like engineering students tend to do better than kindergartners. But everyone else is actually not that much better. And then usually at the bottom of the list are like business students. And I don't know. I love business students. I took a lot of business classes. But it's just, you know, like statistical hard data. I don't know what to tell you. And usually what happens when people build a tower is that people get together, they make a plan, and usually they start building this tower. And most of the time, people build this tower without actually putting the marshmallow on top. And so they build the tower, and when I go around saying 1 minute, everyone's like, oh, frick, the marshmallow. And you start to put the marshmallow, and then what happens? Your tower's like, meow. You're like, oh, no, what happened? I thought it was going to like hold the weight of it. And so you like start, you know, frantically building stuff. I was hoping one of the teams would like build on a chair or build on a table, because one thing I want to get across is the activity is for fun, and hopefully through it, you know, it wake you up, think about it, or wake you up, got you more engaged. But as you're building the tower, I think a lot of people make certain assumptions, right? You assume the tower you're building is going to be able to hold the weight of your marshmallow. You assume ideal conditions, right? Like I was thinking about going around and just going like, your tower can't even stand up to, you know? And then I was hoping someone would build on like a chair or like a table, and then I was gonna go over and be like, ah! And then like your tower would fall over. And the reason I bring it up is because actually I think for many of us, like when we're in college or even when we're not in college, we go through life building our life on some assumptions that we have. Right? You go your whole life with assumptions that you have, and you don't really think about things like foundation. Right? That was, like, I think, the question that was here. Right? Like, most people don't think about foundations. Most people don't think about, hey, what happens in a non-ideal situation? Like, what happens when things don't go well? Are my plans still robust enough to work? I think many of us are familiar when Jesus talks about, like, building your house on the rock, building your house on the sand. You know, and then when troubles come, the house on the sand does not stand, right? And fun tidbit, fun tidbit, right? Fun, just trivia. Like, a lot of people are like, why would you build your house on the sand? Like, why would you even do that? That's stupid. These old people must have been stupid. Well, actually, back in the day in Israel, like, it's pretty hot in some places in Israel, and so the sand would dry out, and it would look like it was solid ground, right? Or you would think it's solid ground, and it wasn't until you dug really deep until you realized, oh, is this foundation worth building on or not, right? And the same way a lot of us started building our towers, building our stuff without really thinking about it, I think we can go through college with the same thing. You just have an assumption. Oh, snap. I just get this degree, my life is set. I just get this job, my life is set. And for me, my testimony, some of it starts around that question. And so I wanted to share a little bit about myself. This is me when I was a baby. I don't know why I had this mullet, but back here I had no free will. I was a baby. I had no choice. This is what happened. This is me. This is my brother. This is my dad. My mom is somewhere. Maybe she's taking the picture. I was born in Philadelphia, like I shared earlier. My parents, they immigrated from Korea. So most of my life growing up, I was working with them at the dry cleaners, or, you know, when they were at the deli, I would stay home by myself. They were doing a lot of like immigrant, typical Korean immigrant jobs, if you know what that means. This is me in high school. Dang. Like other people, like, they think of me and they think like, oh, he's like the mean missions leader. He's like a pastor. When I think about myself, I think about this. I'm like, yo, I was so cool. You know, I actually used to have blue contact lenses that I would wear. I thought it was so cool. So this is me in high school. So I did, like I said, I did grew up in Philadelphia, but I ended up moving a lot. So I was in Virginia for a little bit. I was in Ohio for a little bit. This is me in Ohio. And then what's the next picture? Oh, this is me, freshman year. Okay, but let's go back. So I was talking about foundations and assumptions. And one huge question I had when I was in middle school was like, Dad, Mom, why am I doing all this homework? Right? They were like, oh, you gotta work hard in school. And I was just, like I said, I don't know if it's because my dad, he's pretty open thinker, open-minded. I asked a lot of questions. So I'd be like, Dad, why am I doing all this homework? And they would say, hey, you have to do this homework. You have to do school well because you want to go to a good high school. And so in Virginia, they have a lot of like magnet schools or schools that you have to test into. So that you have to do well so that you can test into some of these schools. So I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And then sadly enough, we moved away. So I never tested into schools anyway. I just went to a different public school. And then in high school, I had the same questions. Like, Dad, Mom, why do I have to do all this homework? Like, what's the point of working hard? They're like, well, you got to go to a good college. And I'm like, okay, why do I have to go to a good college? Like, oh, so you can get a good job. Why do I need a good job? Oh, so you can have money and you can spend time with your friends and family. And for me, it didn't make sense for two reasons. One, I was already spending time with friends and family. Like, I don't know why I have to do all this hard work for the future. And two is that one of my best friend's dad passed away when we were 8 years old because he had lung cancer. And I just, even at that young age, I remember being traumatized by someone passing away. One night, my parents, they're kind of irresponsible now that I think about it, but I was like probably around 8 or 9, and they went to Atlantic City, which is in New Jersey. They had like a fun time by themselves. They just left the kids at home, and they went. And I remember like, I was so scared that they were not going to come back because my best friend's dad had passed away. And so the second thing was, it didn't make sense to me. I'm working hard, middle school, high school, college, but I could die before I reap the benefits of any of these things. And then I just spent my life doing all this work and have nothing to show for it. So I just remember feeling like, this is stupid, right? Like, it's like building your tower. Like, yeah, it's fine if everything works. If everything works and your marshmallow stays there, no one knocks over your table, no one blows over your tower, it might work. But I've experienced like, okay, but people die. Bad things happen. And so for me, I had this question of like, what's the purpose of all this stuff if I'm not even guaranteed anything? And so in high school, I made the intentional decision, I'm going to be a hedonist. And if you don't know what a hedonist is, it means someone who lives for pleasure. And so, you know, I'm like a smart church boy. So I'm like, okay, obviously, even in hedonism, there are like higher pleasures and there are like lesser pleasures. Right, people say things like, in the typical example in philosophy is like, oh, wine is a higher pleasure than beer. Like, there are some things that are more sophisticated, and these things are more, it's a higher pleasure, it's a higher value. And for myself, I was like, that makes sense to me. Like, all of these other things that I've seen people get involved in, there's a lot of downsides to them. But friends and family, that seems like a meaningful pleasure. So in high school, like, intentionally, my focus was just to have as much fun with my friends and family as humanly possible, while not ruining my relationship with my parents, so doing at least a little schoolwork to keep them satisfied. So that was kind of my mindset going into college, was like, okay, like, have as much fun as I can, because then when I die, I'll be like, oh, at least I had as much fun as I could. I have no regrets. And so I went to college, and I was going to say, you know, I'm being vulnerable, right? This is a looking through old pictures, I'm like, why did I look so... you know, like, older pastors like Pastor Ben, they don't have all their like high school pictures and stuff on Facebook, right? They didn't have that back then. But for all these younger pastors coming up, you know, if you go, like, you know, when you open someone's Facebook photos and instead of clicking to the right, you click to the left, you see all their old photos. Man, this is vulnerable stuff. Okay, so anyway, me in high school, and then this is me my first maybe month in college. I still don't know what's going on with everything. No, I didn't have any good friends to tell me what's up. And this is actually at like our first freshman and senior harvest activity night. And that's how I went into college, thinking like, well, I'm gonna live for hedonism. I'm gonna live for fun and pleasure. And college is a great place to do that. All your friends are in with like 1 square mile radius. You have a lot of friends. Community is really enjoyable. And then this is my freshman year life group. With all these people, you probably know absolutely none of them, except for some of you might know. This is Jenny Vick. She was here for a little bit. And so this was me freshman year in college. And as I was in college, a couple things happened. One is that when I went to college, I had this choice of going to church or not, right? Like, my parents are not there. They're not going to make me go. No one's there. And I had this choice, and I thought to myself, if God is real, if God is real, it has to make some sort of impact on my life. There's no way that God can be real and inconsequential. I don't know if that's a valid possibility. And if God's not real, then I don't need to spend my life faking and going to church. Like, why would I do that? And so I was like, you know what, God, I'm going to give you this year to see if you're real or not. And so that's why I was checking out Harvest. I was checking out other churches. And at the same time, throughout that year, what happened more and more was I started learning about God, and it was great because I would go to our Access or Sunday Celebration, and I would, through the preaching, I would hear about this God who is infinite and who is unique and who is almighty and worthy. And it really started getting to me, because in college, I realized, you know, if I live a super hedonistic lifestyle, I kind of felt a little selfish. Like, I'm just living for, like, my best life. And then I'm like, you know, maybe there's more value in life if I help other people, right? Like, altruism, humanism. It's like there's satisfaction in helping other people. Maybe that's good. And I thought about it, but I could help people, and inevitably, even the people I help, they die, right? And then I'm just thinking, like, if I extrapolate this to infinity, my impact on their life is meaningless, right? Over the course of hundreds of years, my impact in someone's life is zero. You know, like, if they get hit by a bus one day, like, all the times I hung out with them, meaningless. You know, it doesn't impact their kids and family. So I was like, even altruism, humanism, like, man, it's like really limited in its impact. And so I was like, I don't know what the purpose is. And then at that time I was learning about God, I realized, you know, every other thing that I've thought about of living life for is pretty finite. Yeah, it's pretty like limited. And here I'm introduced to this idea this idea of a God who is infinite and perfect. And so I started thinking, like, you know, even in media, you have people who live for things greater than themselves, right? People live for friendship. People live for love. Man, if you fall in love with the right person, you live your life for them. And so the idea of living life for something greater than myself was there. And then I was like, maybe this something greater than myself is God. And maybe it actually makes more sense that instead of living for myself, who I know is messed up and who I know is finite, maybe it makes sense to live for this God who is actually infinite and worthy and eternal. And as I started thinking about that, it really started messing with my mind, like, man, what is the purpose of my life? And at the same time when I was in college, I started confronting some things about myself. So up until that point, I was a pretty tame child, kind of, sort of. I had anger issues like crazy. I had anger issues and I had video game issues. But it's weird. My mom would say things like, Sam, besides anger and video games, you're such a good child. And so I was like, this must be true. My mom said, this must be true, right? So besides anger and video games, I must be a pretty good person. And so it didn't really weigh on me how messed up I was until I got to college, until I got into a relationship and saw like the depravity of my heart, how selfish I can be, how petty I can be, how jealous I could be, how insecure I could be. When I started seeing my interactions with friends, family getting broken, and that's when I started being confronted with my sin. Like, wow, it's more than just my anger issues. It's more than just my video game addiction. Like, I have something seriously wrong with me. And it was also during that time that I started experiencing God's love more experientially. You know, whether it was through people, whether it was through times of worship, I was just like, wow, I would just feel this love that was overwhelming that I couldn't really describe. And I remember this one time, like during worship, I was like breaking down because the weight of my sins was so real. I was like, wow, if God is really perfect, I don't even deserve to be in front of him. And I just felt the weight of that, like, man, I really am like so despicable and so not worthy to be here. And then yet I felt this sense of forgiveness and love. And so all of these experiential things are happening as my mind is getting rocked about the infinite glory of God. And so as these things are happening, I'm like, you know what? I think God is real. And if he's real, I think it's worth living for him. And so these are things that are going on my freshman year. And so as that was happening, you know, I'm like learning about God. And it was crazy that year. Like I remember I used to read the Bible when I couldn't fall asleep. Like I grew up in the church, but I really read the Bible very little outside. And then, you know, those days where you just, I don't know, you have like half insomnia and you know you need to fall asleep. I just whoosh, whip out my Bible, read it, pass out. But like that freshman year, I just remember like stuff started clicking, you know? And I'm like, I grew up kind of like a rap hip hop fan. And one thing that's great about rap is like the level of allusions and complexity that's there is amazing. So you think it's like a song about so-and-so, but if you really understood what this rapper is talking about, if you really understand the volume of literature and music that he's referencing in their lyric, he or she is referencing in their lyrics, it becomes so much more rich of a song. You're like, wow, there's so many connections to other works of art, literature, history, culture, current events that's happening. And that's when I started realizing freshman year, like, the Bible is like that. There's so many things that are connected. And it had never occurred to me that that's how the Bible was. And so I remember, like, God was, like, stirring up this heart of, like, man, loving the Bible, loving the Word. And you know, in church, we're singing them songs like, Jesus, take it all. Take it all. You're like, I give myself away. You're like, all these songs, my whole life is for you. You know, you're singing these songs. And I just felt like, man, this is someone that is worth living for, giving my life for. And then my sophomore year, Pastor Seth shared that they were going to send and plant, they were going to plant a church in Jakarta. And let me give you some background information. Growing up, I had never thought of church. I didn't know what church planting was. I had never heard of it. I just imagined churches always existed. Like old people always existed, and then old people always had churches, and then you had new people born into churches. That's how it worked, right? And so when I got to college, and you have this dude, and he's like, we're going to plant a church here, and then we're going to plant a church here, and then we're going to plant a church internationally. Bah! And you're like, I'm like, this guy's crazy. Like, what are you talking about, right? But after that freshman year, they planted HMCC of Austin. And then, like I said, my life group leader ended up going to Austin. And so I was like, oh, wow, church planting, it's like a thing. And then, you know, he was sharing about like, man, like so many seniors, you went through 4 years of college and you still don't know what you're doing with your life. Don't be like those losers. You know, like you could go to Indonesia, you could find what God is doing in your life, you could find a purpose for your life. And I was like, that sounds good. Like, I don't want to spend 4 years and not know what I'm doing with my life. I don't want to be purposeless. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this thing. I'm gonna apply. You know. And afterwards, I was praying. I'm like, wow, that's really selfish. I'm like, I'm just going because I want to know more about my life. I don't care about anything. And then I was praying through it more, and it really hit me. Like, I say things like, God, I give you my life. I give you everything. And then I felt like I was like, what about just 1 year? If you say you're giving me your whole life, giving 1 year shouldn't be a problem. And I was like, just, you know, measuring the logic of that, I'm like, I guess that's true. You have my whole life anyway, so like this year, technically, I guess it's yours too. Okay, I do it. And so I remember I applied to the Jakarta team, and it was weird. Like, think about it. I was a sophomore. Like, if I seem like a little immature and goofy now, like, think about what I would have been like 12 years ago or 10 years ago. This is ridiculous, right? Some of you are freshmen and sophomore, or some of you are seniors or graduated, and you look back and you think about who you were sophomore year. Like, I was probably like that, but worse, you know? So I'm like, I don't know how it happened. They let me go. I really thought I was like, I was so scared after I got accepted for like a couple months. I'm like, man, if they really knew who I was, I don't know if I would be allowed to be on this team. I felt like that so long. I didn't share to Pastor Seth about it until after we came back. I was like, tricked you. We already came back. You can't do anything now. But anyway, boom, 2009, me. Well, I don't know why I'm so ridiculous in all of these pictures, but I went to Indonesia, and then I picked this picture because it's like the most like, oh yeah, Indonesia, it's like a developing country. This is not what it looked like day to day. Like, we lived in a city. I lived in an apartment that was amazing. It was nice. But we were there for a year, and you know, I think I learned two big lessons while I was there. The first one was that God builds his church. There was a life group maybe a couple months in where it was just our church plant team and then two other people that we had met. And I remember Pastor Seth was like, man, guys, like, we're here, and if all God is bringing is two people, that's okay. But like, man, let us really pray and seek God. And so at, like, starting that point, some of us were like fasting and just like praying, God, would you help us to meet people, et cetera, et cetera. And then by the end of the year, it had like grown. I'll show you a picture later. And so these are some of the people that I went with. This is Pastor John. He's a pastor in Indonesia now. This is Pastor Joe. He's a pastor in Singapore now. This is Rachel. I think she's in Hong Kong right now. She's not part of the team. She's one of the students that was there during our first year. And then by the end of the year, it had like grown, right? We're like, wow, praise God. And I realized, like, wow, God builds his church. And he builds it like one person at a time. Right, like, a church is not so much an organization as it is a spiritual family, and each person matters, and God was bringing people. And it was funny, we did OCR, I remember we were hustling, like, oh yeah, I'm from America, check this out, blah, blah, blah. And then we had like 50 people sign up, they're interested about game night. And we're like, man, 50 people are interested in game night. So Friday comes, we're like waiting in the lobby, like, oh man, 50 people, how many people do you think are gonna show up? We had 50 people sign up. And then like an hour passes and no one shows up. And so we're like, all right, maybe just like 20 people are gonna come. You know, they're like late, you know, because they have like all this traffic. And then like an hour 30 passes, no one's there. Like, okay, maybe five people are on their way. And maybe, I don't know what happened. Maybe they just missed the directions or something. No one came that night out of those 50 people. And then, but lo and behold, the people who eventually came were people who had seen our tent from afar and just felt like, oh, I wonder what that is. I'm gonna check that out. And then those two students were like the most committed students throughout the rest of the year. And it was like evident to me that, man, despite my efforts, really what God is doing is God's gonna bring people one by one, and God builds his church. So that's one of the lessons that I learned when I was there. And the other one was that it's not about me, right? Because I had gone and I'm like, I had this faith to apply. I'm here. I'm gonna invest in people. I'm gonna grow. But really, everyone else got a legit job except for me. And so my main duties were like going to the grocery store to pick up stuff for our team. And then every Wednesday, I would like get a bucket of hot water and a rag. And I would have to like wash the living room floor of our apartment to get ready for life group. We didn't have like vacuums or mops or anything. And I just remember thinking that I'm like on the ground. I'm like, is this why I came to Indonesia? Just to like clean the living room? And I just remember in that moment feeling like, Sam, it's not about you. Like, you are like, it's a bonus that you got to come. I don't need you. I just remember being so humble, thinking like, yeah, I'm not doing much. I came here, I'm like, you could have hired a maid to do this, really. And I just remember thinking like, wow, it's not about me. Like, actually, in spite of me, God works in such powerful ways. And so those were two of the main lessons I was learning while I was there. But I also realized like 80, 90% of the stuff I was doing there were things I could do in Ann Arbor, right? Like meeting with people for LCG, being a faithful life group member, sharing about Jesus. Like, these are all things I could do back home in Ann Arbor. And I was like, oh, that's really weird. It's actually not that different from like maybe what I thought Christian life was going to be in Ann Arbor. And then two, I just started making some big decisions. Like up until that point, back when I had the all this weird stuff going on, I was a nuclear engineering student. Because when I got to college, really all I wanted was money and a girlfriend. And like nuclear engineering, I don't know if you, like when I got into school, they were graduating, no sorry, when I got into school, there were more open jobs for nuclear engineering every year than the number of graduating nuclear engineering students. So like, it's like money. And it's like a solid job, stable job. So I was like, nuclear engineering it is. And so I did that. But when I was in Indonesia, I just felt like, man, if I really want God to be open to wherever God wants me to go, whatever God wants me to do, like nuclear engineering is just not the best major for that. Because nuclear engineering is like, usually it's in like small towns that no one wants to live in. Like people work in power plants. And outside of that, it's not a very useful degree. And so I just be like, dude, this degree is so specialized. Like, what should I do? And I remember I'm like, God, I'm going to change my major so that I can just be available wherever you call me. And so I thought about mechanical engineering, material engineering, and then I went to industrial engineering, which was great. I love it. And so some big decisions happened while I was in Indonesia, and then I came back. And as I came back, I just felt like, you know, I went to this I went to church planting for a year, and I want to just be able to commit to missions every year. And so whether that's me physically going, whether that's me financially supporting, I want to be a part of what God is doing every year. Just I want that to be my lifestyle. And so since then, after I came back, I went on a couple missions trips. These are all CSMP pictures. CSMP 2011. CSMP 2013, CSMP 2014, CSMP 2016. And so I think here, there's some Austin people. I don't know if you can really see. These are blurry Facebook pictures. And so, yeah, but I think here is Willie right here. Where David at? David, where are you at? Oh, you're right here, right here. Boom. David's there too. Grace, no, she's right here. Other people are in there as well. And so anyway, CSMP was really good. And it's like this, I started learning how to serve people, how to like love people, love the city more. All of these things were happening during CSMP. And then this one thing happened during CSMP 2013 where P2F, he took some of the leaders and we went to this place called Bacon in Ann Arbor. And I'm like, wow, P2F, you're the best missions team leader ever. You took us to Bacon and like we're eating and we're having a great time, you know. And then he's like, hey, Sam, have you ever thought about praying through pastoral ministry? I'm like, bro, you took me to Bacon and you got me all fattened up and you're gonna ask me this question? And I'm like, no, I've never thought about that. You know, I come from like a Korean-American background where like pastors like are respected, but they're not usually like very wealthy. And I wanted, like I said, when I went to college, all I wanted was money and a girlfriend. So I was like, I don't wanna be a pastor, what, no. And he's like, what's the worst that could happen? I'm like, you know the worst that could happen. I could be called to be a pastor. Like, what do you? He was like, just think about it. Like, really, like, the whole process for me, like, it just helped me get closer to God and to know him more. And so I'm like, ah, oh, man, I do want to get closer to God, whatever. So I started praying about it back in 2013. And over the years, like, it just, it was always kind of like there and then not there. I remember after praying about it for a year, after, like, praying through my fears and worries, I feel like the answer that I got was like, Sam, just grow up a little bit and mature as a person, and you can think about specific like calling later. Like, you're not even mature as a person. I'm like, okay, you're right, God. And so I was like, yeah, let me just grow as a Christian, right? Grow as a well-rounded Christian. And then after a couple of years, I, you know, came back and was praying about it. And oh, by that time, a couple of years later, I was working. And so I had graduated undergrad, I had graduated grad school, I was working, and I like really loved my job. So my job was kind of weird where Blue Cross Blue Shield funded us, but I was working for the University of Michigan. And so we were in this weird space where we had a lot of autonomy because all of our money comes from somewhere else. So we don't have to answer to anyone really in University of Michigan. But I get all the benefits of working at University of Michigan. And my team was amazing. There are all these ladies who have like 15, 20 years experience in healthcare and manufacturing, super smart, super capable. I remember one of my coworkers, she comes up to me and she's like, Sam, it doesn't get better than this. And I was like, one part of me is like, yeah, I have literally the best job. And then I'm like, wait, it doesn't get better than this? Like, I just started. I hope it, you know, like, but I had such a great job. I like got to do great work. I worked with great people. The money and flexibility was good. And so I was praying. I was like, God, I want to be a healthcare leader. Like, there's such need for leadership in healthcare. Like, I don't know why. Like, just the level of leadership in healthcare seems to be not as high as the level of leadership in other places, in other industries. God, we need good Christian leaders in healthcare. I'm praying, and I'm like, God, I did the master's. I think I can do this. And then God's like, yeah, you're right. We need good leaders in healthcare. Not you. And I'm like, no. And so I was like praying about it more, and I shared with some people earlier, but as I was praying through like what does it mean to be a pastor and all of these things, I just, after I like waded through all the crap in my life, I was like, you know, actually, yeah, like I feel called, right, to be involved in forming the doctrine and the discipline and direction of our church. Like, I don't see how I could do life outside of that. And so I was like, okay. And so I got into the pastor internship in 2016, and then I think in 2017 I got commissioned as a pastor. And it's really funny in all these pictures, because back then I had this little like man sprout thingy going on. It's not even like a full man bun, man sprout. But Pastor Pete, thank God, he like covered it, so you can't even see. It just looks like I'm normal. But really, under here is this little like shumai dumpling thingy going on of hair. It's like pretty funny. Anyway, I got commissioned. Look, Pastor Ben's here too. Yay. I got commissioned. And then soon after that, as we were talking about that, we talked about sending a team out to Detroit. And so just the background of Detroit is that back in 2012, just a group of people went out to Detroit and they started a life group out there. And since 2012, it grew to be two life groups, and then it kind of grew to a ministry. And they were really like, hey, we really think we need to plant a church here. We're like shuttling 30 people back and forth from Detroit every Sunday. And to be frank, like in the beginning, our pastors asked me, and I was like, no. Because, and the reason I said no was like a lot of things matched up. Like Philadelphia, Detroit, actually, they're kind of similar. Demographically, like comfortable in the demographic. And also, like, I had gone to Detroit a couple times throughout my undergrad, gotten to know the city, gotten to know the people, really enjoyed it. All of these things were matching up, but I just felt no sense of conviction. Like, I couldn't, like, if people asked me, like, why did you come here, I would have no good reason to give them, you know? And so I was like, I can't with an honest heart say I feel called or drawn to Detroit. So at first I said no. And then afterwards, a little bit later, I was on a work trip in the west side, I think, of west or east side, I can't remember, of Michigan. And after just that time of driving, I was listening to the sermon, and then afterwards, I just felt like God was saying, hey, Sam, I'm working in Detroit. Do you want to come? And then I'm like, all right, I'm down. And so I went back to our pastors, and I said, hey, I think actually God's inviting me, and I'm like down to go. And so then after that, we assembled a team of people. And so this is Detroit that's here. Our team members are from, three of them are from Michigan. Two of them are from Texas. That's so weird. You guys must be doing something right here. And so two of them are from Texas. I'm, like I said, from Philadelphia. And so this is our team that we sent out that first year to Detroit. Like, we're trying to be so tough, but we're not. And then afterwards, a year later, they sent Danny and Sarah as well to be a part of our second year team. And so we've been there. I moved there in, what is this now? June of 2017. So I've been there for a little bit over a year. And then we started in January of this year. And it's been fun. Like, we go around, we're like trying to see how we can be a part of the city, how we can be a part of what's going on. And I shared with some people in the car earlier, but like really for us, and our heart is transforming lives, transforming the world, like that same heartbeat. But in our city, we're like, what does it look like? Like, we really desire to see disciple makers in every neighborhood of Detroit. Like, what's happening in Detroit right now is, it's like, there's a lot of good stuff happening downtown and midtown, but it's really kind of like specified. Only a handful of people, only a certain demographic of people are benefiting from a lot of that development. And a lot of the neighborhoods, it's still really challenging, economically, spiritually, socially, family, all these things are really challenging. So we really want to be a church that can reach every neighborhood in Detroit. And then we also want to see redemption, reconciliation, and restoration in Detroit, whether it's in like our school systems, government systems, financially. We want to see a part of that restoration happening, especially in families. We just see a lot of brokenness. And then we're like, hey, as we reach Detroit, I think we're going to be able to reach the world. Because Detroit actually has a lot of different people groups that are represented there from around the world. In Metro Detroit, there's a lot of people from around the world. We feel like, man, as we're faithful in reaching Detroit, we're going to be able to send people back to the rest of the world. And it's exciting. Like, when you look in the New Testament, like, Jesus's disciples are like, we say this in our church all the time, they're normal dudes. They're like normal people. They're like fishermen, tax collector, anonymous, but they're like pretty much like blue collar worker people, you know, and God uses these kind of like country blue collar worker people to change the world. And so we're like, dude, yeah, you could be from Detroit and you could be from outside of Detroit. God can use us to transform the world. And so that's what we've been doing. And then this is a picture of us at our most recent H Games. You know, we're kind of cute. This is our super small student ministry. Someone asked me, our student ministry is super small. It's maybe like 5 college students on a good day, like international students, domestic students from either Wayne State or from U of D Mercy, University of Detroit Mercy. A good chunk of our people are people who are just working, 18 to 35 working adults. And some of the most fun parts of being in Detroit and the hard parts of being in Detroit is that our church is just really diverse demographically. And so we have like a good chunk of us are like white collar professionals. You know, we not only bad, we got our master's degree. You know, we are professional people working, making that cash money and big, sorry, making a living in, you know, in these different companies. And then like a number of our people in our church are like, you know, high school dropouts, homeless, and just like figuring out how we can work. We have people like ethnically it's different. There's, you know, you can see there's African Americans, there's a lot of Asian Americans. We have some Latino Americans in there as well. We have a mix of people. That's been really fun too. And a lot of it is just like, yeah, how do we live life together? Like, how do we be unified when there's so many differences? And I think it's been a pretty enjoyable but challenging experience so far. But on the everyday, I would imagine it's somewhat similar to here. It's a lot about life-on-life discipleship. It's getting into people's lives, reading the word together, trying to obey that, you know, confessing sins to one another. How can we be the light and salt in our workplace, things like that. And so if we've been there, like I said, just for a little over a year now, and I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy it mostly because they also put up with a lot of my craziness, you know, like, how do I say this? You know, sometimes in Ann Arbor and in other circles, there's a lot of like sugarcoating and like a lot of like right now what's happening. I got to be safe in how I talk about things. And then our church, we like to keep it real. And so I really enjoy that. And so that's been really fun. But yeah, we're like super still figuring it out. Like every week to week, like we're figuring out how do we reach college students? How do we reach people in the city? How do we reach people who are coming in? And so that's basically the journey so far. And so, oh, I forgot to ask about the question cards. But now what we're going to have is a Q&A time. And we're going to pass out some index cards for you to write questions on. I was supposed to introduce this before I started talking, but I got too excited. And so if you have any questions you would like to ask me, you can write it on the Q&A index card. And I think Willie is going to be our facilitator. So we're going to pass out the cards. Take a second to think about it. You can ask me questions about really whatever. And then I'll try to keep the answers as PG as possible. Yeah. Oh, I could be real. So.
Let's give it for Pastor Sam just sharing a glimpse of his life. I guess in the meantime, as if anyone has questions right now, feel free to shout out. Well, that way not to wait too long. And then pass your cards to the hospitality folks, and they'll sort it out, and it'll make way to us. So yeah, if anyone has any questions for Pastor Sam, feel free to just raise your hand. You know. Thank you, Angel. if not, I can start us up as well. I got a question myself. So Pastor Sam, so I think one thing I'm curious is even just how to live out like transculturalism in our church. Obviously, the ones like you mentioned in the picture behind you, is very diverse in backgrounds, both socioeconomically and just racially as well. And so, yeah, so my question is basically two things, like even just your definition, or rather, what is the definition of transculturalism in our church? And also, how do we, or from your point of view, like living it out day by day?
So, if I remember correctly, the official definition of transculturalism is like being willing to go through the difficulties to be able to engage and embrace people who are very different from you, different cultures, different value, different background. Understanding that we're actually called to a community that transcends just our culture here. And I think what that looks like on the day-to-day, you know, I think maybe what's easiest is like tolerating people who are different from you. Like you get together and you try not to step on each other's toes and stuff. What it looks like really though, in our context, we ask each other a lot of questions. Like when we don't understand things, we just really ask them, like, hey, what do you mean by that? And then in general, we just try to get to know each other really on a personal level. I think transculturalism is actually pretty hard. I think you have to have some really strong convictions that it's based on. Maybe the first being that like we're all created in the image of God, and that everyone has inherent value, and that even despite cultural differences, like there's real dignity that's there. And I think there has to be a willingness to go through the discomforts to get to know that, to get to be able to view that. And so it's really funny. Like, dude, okay, so we're at Life Group and we're sharing, hey, what do you want to see happen this year in Life Group? And people are sharing like, you know, I want to see community being built up. I want to see growing in God's word. And then this one dude, this African-American brother, he's like, I just want to see, what did he say? I just want to be able to poke at everybody's insecurities so that they can build up walls. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's like opposite, right? And so I like later afterwards, I'm like, dude, what did you mean by that? I'm so confused. And he's like, yeah, like people roast each other in our community all the time because we know that once you leave this community and people are really coming for you, you'll have a thick skin and you're able to let it bounce off of you. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a little bit different from what I thought, you know? And like just having these conversations, like I don't understand what you're doing right now. And I would say like, for myself, maybe I'm a little bit more comfortable with different demographics. Like, I think it's cool. Like, I grew up in Philadelphia. My parents are immigrants. I come from, like, a blue-collar background. Majority of my neighborhood was black. So I'm, like, really comfortable with that. And then I went to Ann Arbor. And for, like, 10 years of my life, I was in this white-collar, like, educated, ivory tower kind of society. And so I float back and forth between those things pretty well. But I think a lot of it is coming down to questions, asking to each other and understanding each other. But really, like, do I love this person, you know? And for me, what I think for a lot of people, what we really do have to deal with is, like, the real prejudices and challenges that we have in our heart. I think especially if I could speak to the Asian American people here, like I think there's a real desire to not get engaged in the discussion of racism. At least for me, this is what happened growing up, right? Like white people make fun of me and then black people make fun of me. And then I'm like, y'all got beef with each other. So I'm like, screw y'all. Y'all can have your own beef. I'm just going to be rich and forget you guys, right? That was like my information. Like I experienced discrimination from both sides. Why should I get into this conversation? And then all the time the conversation is about this white-black binary. And I'm like, you're not even talking about me. Right? NAACP is not for me. And I'm like, I'm confused because I'm color too. And so I used to be very apathetic. Like, I don't care about this. You guys handle your own crap. I'm going to do me and I'm going to make money. And then there was this summer where we had just a lot of killings of young African-American men. And I remember sitting in Sunday celebration and I looked over and I saw one of the black men in our church in Ann Arbor. And I was just thinking to myself, my younger brother, he's like 6 feet. He's like 250. I hope he's not embarrassed about me sharing that. He's a big boy, right? And I was just thinking to myself, dude, if my brother was black, I would have to be worried about how people view him. And like, is he gonna be safe coming back from home or doing stuff just because he's a large dude? Like, he's Asian right now, so everyone just thinks he's like Kung Fu Panda. But like, but if he was black, it would be different. And then I thought to myself, like, man, if it was really my brother going through this stuff, I could not stand here and be uninterested and disengaged. And I had just had to wrestle through with a lot of stuff. And, you know, I had had a lot of stuff going through my heart about, like, racism and stuff before. And I had like experienced various levels of healing, but I think that summer really challenged me. And I think it was from that point where I'm like, man, if we are really called to be brothers and sisters in Christ, like I have to get to know these people and I have to really learn to love them. I have to learn to forgive them, I have to receive forgiveness. And I think that's what it looks like. And usually it's like funny, but sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to have real conversations. We're coming from such different places, but I think that understanding that like we are really all created in the image of God, and also this idea of like, man, we're called to love one another no matter how different we are, you know. And it's interesting because even in the New Testament, like people call people Christians because they couldn't come up with a word for them, right? They were no longer just the Jews, right? So you couldn't just call them the Jews because they weren't Jews. They were also Gentiles in that group. And so they like have to put a label on them. And so in Antioch, you see that they're first called Christians. And so for me, I think those are the things that drive some of that desire for transculturalism. And on the day-to-day, that's a little bit of what it can look like. So I got excited there. Sorry.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's good passions. Does anyone have any other questions? Just a reminder, if you want to share your question through the card, just pass it to a fellow hospitality member. If not, you want to like speak out open, just raise your hand and I'll pass the mic to you. And yeah, thanks for sharing about that.
I'll close my eyes so I don't see the color of your card and then match it up to who is actually. I'm just kidding, sorry.
New takers, any takers? Okay. Question number one. What has been the most difficult thing you've had to overcome throughout your life? Difficulties.
I don't know what the person is trying to ask, but I think it's just my self-centeredness. It's the biggest thing that I have to wrestle with every day. I'm just like super selfish, super self-centered. And so my entire, like think about it, for 20 some years of my life, my perspective and brain is just thinking about myself. And so everything I think about is oriented around the reference point of myself. So breaking out of that every day is really challenging. Besides that, like my life has not been super difficult, at least the way that I see it. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Yeah, just wrestling with internal things. Probably most difficult.
I think this one's a little bit more personal, what someone's been sharing. But this question is, what were some things that helped form your faith during your freshman year? If you can recall. Other than like the...
I don't know if that's a shot at my age or my memory. I don't...
Both.
I think one big thing was the example of older people. I had been used to people talking about Christianity at a, like talk about Christianity, but then live lives that are like opposite of what they say. And so seeing the example, especially of older men, by older I mean seniors, they're not actually that old, but anyway, older men like living out what they say they believe, I think that was really formational for me. Like, wow, there's people here who really believe what they're talking about. And I think that got me intrigued to start thinking about what is it that I believe and how does that affect my life? That and as cliche as it sounds, like reading the word. Like I said, it's really bad when I was listening to some of these sermons. And you know, like Paul talks in the first person sometimes in the Bible. Like in the old church I went to, I don't know, maybe it's because it was in Korean or because I was not listening. But I was just like, what the heck? This person is talking in the first person. Is this real? Is this from the Bible? I just didn't know anything that much deeply about the Bible. And so that first year, when I just got to read it for myself, I think that really, really helped in growing deeper in my faith.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm trying to organize all these different thoughts right now. But I think this is more like a reference to your parents, like I guess like the relationship with them. You can't touch on them like briefly, but this question in particular is, how did your parents react when you decided to go into pastoral work, and how did they personally influence your faith as well?
Yeah, so my dad was like, don't come back to me until you have real calling, And then when you have a real sense of calling, you don't even need to talk to me. And then I was like, what? That's kind of cool. And like, I think for him, the biggest concern was, I think he's seen a lot of people who see pastoral ministry as like a progression of Christian maturity. Like, oh, once I reach a certain level of Christian maturity, the next step is to become a pastor. And then he's seen a lot of people, I think, just burn out and get challenged and fall away from that. And so for him, it's like, there's got to be a real sense of calling. Like, is this something that God wants you to do? Or this is just something you think is the next step? Like, you better be sure about that. And so I think that was his biggest concern. My mom was pretty supportive as well. I think for me, what was challenging was, like, in the family, it was kind of assumed that I was going to be the moneymaker. Like, my parents never put that on me. They were really cool about it. But I know how things work in the Korean Asian culture. And then I know that, like, my little brother, he's like, nice guy. Like, all of my meanness, he's nice. You know, he's compassionate, gentle, caring, protective, all those things. But we all knew he wasn't going to be the moneymaker, you know? And so I was, you know, it was like, oh, I was making good money. And so I have felt, personally, I just had felt a lot of pressure, like, man, if I step away from this, I don't think I'm going to be able to provide very well. And then my mom, after a while, one thing she had said that really gave me confidence was, like, she was like, Sam, it would be an honor for us if we had a pastor in the family. And it was embarrassing, man. I was in my car on the phone. I was, like, crying in the parking lot. I was supposed to meet someone. And then I'm crying in front of, it's like a Chinese grocery store. I was, like, crying. I go in after the phone call, and they see my, like, red eye. They're like, is everything okay? I'm like, everything's okay. Don't worry about it, okay? Everything's okay. You know, and so I think that's how they were. So initially, they were a little skeptical. I think you can only be skeptical. Your kids are so messed up, and you know it. And so when they're like, I'm going to be a pastor, you're like, pfft. But after that, they were pretty challenging, but also encouraging through it. Yeah. Their faith, personally. My mom, she's super... I think, like, she's really, like, conservative and fundamental. I think I learned a lot from her not to compromise. And then my dad, I think he just always challenged me to think deeply about stuff. And he's a little bit, like, more open and a little bit more liberal than your, like, typical Asian dad, if that makes sense. And so they influenced me a lot. They lived out their faith in a lot of different ways. And I think I just saw from my dad a lot of grace. So if my mom taught me, like, the importance of God's word and his character and not compromising, I think from my dad, I just learned a lot of grace. He would say crazy things like, Sam, David, even if you bring home a girl and a baby, we'll still love you. I'm just like, what you talk? You outside of marriage? What? Are you crazy? Why would you encourage things like that? You know? And then years later, I think I realized, like, oh, he just means he loves us. Like, there's unconditional love. And it took me a while to understand that, but I think those two things really affected me. Like, like, there's this deep necessity to hold on to the truths of God, but there's also this, like, radical grace and love that's there that really affected me. It was really confusing, though. When I was growing up, my mom would be like, if anyone ever hits you, turn the other cheek. And my dad would be like, if anyone hits you, you better hit him right back. So that was a little conflicting, but most of the parts, it was pretty helpful.
That's a good balance.
Yeah.
A lot of these questions is a lot of curiosity in terms of, like, your journey to, like, the pastoral, like, ministry. You were sharing, like, your testimony. I think this one is, how did you know that... you already kind of answered already.
Oh, snap. Sorry. Oh, neon green. You got rejected.
Yeah. For full disclosure, for time's sake, we can't necessarily go through all these different cards, right? But, you know, Pastor Sam is to be here today, tonight, and also tomorrow morning as well. And, you know, feel free to, like, have a casual conversation about these things, too.
Casual conversation about intensely deep and personal things.
Definitely. Yeah, you gotta start somewhere and go deep into it.
Open.
Okay. So we're still pretty good on time, like 10 to 15 minutes of, like, questioning. But for this next question, how did you discern that God was telling you to go into pastoral ministry? What confirmed that as a calling from God?
Yeah, so like I said, I spent a lot of time praying through it. I also talked to our pastors about it. I think a lot of it was the process. First level was just like acknowledging my fears, a lot of the fears I had. So people had asked me before, like, hey, Sam, like, do you think you'd ever be a pastor? My answer was like, oh, I think I would be a horrible pastor, right? But my answer was never whether I felt like God was leading me in that direction or not. It was just like, oh, I think my capabilities were not matched to what I assumed they need to be. And so a lot of it was working through the insecurities I had about capability, a lot of fears I had. Like, I realized my bigger fear, not the biggest fear that I had was not making money. It was like getting looked down on. And I think growing up without having a lot of money, I think that was the biggest thing that I hated, was when people would look down on me because I didn't have money. And so really digging into my heart and seeing what are the fears that make me so hesitant even about considering the calling, like working through a lot of that stuff. Like healthcare consultant. Wow, sounds like a real job. Sounds like you went to college for that, you know? And then, oh, pastor. Oh, you a cop out. Like that's in my mind, that's how I saw it. Like, you know, like what? Why would, you know? And so I think I just wrestled through a lot of those fears and insecurities. And then after that, it was just praying, like, you know, what do I see God doing in my life? What is the trajectory that seems to be there? What are the passions and things that he seems to have been giving me? And then, yeah, like I said, as I was praying, I just felt like, yeah, being responsible for the doctrine, discipline, direction, development of our church, the four Ds we have, I just felt like that seemed in line with everything that God was doing in my life. I did share, too, like, I just did a personal study of what it means to be a pastor. You know, like in my mind, it's very possible in the next 50 years, American church might not look like this. And so if that changes, does my calling change? You know, is my calling to preach once a week on Sundays, or is my calling to shepherd a people? And so like going through the word, like, God, what in the New Testament, what is an elder? What do they do? What is the actual calling that's there? And so just working through a lot of that self for myself personally, you know, because it just what it means to be a pastor functionally can look different from church to church, from country to country, from time period to time period. But what is the core essence of what it is that I think God's calling me to? So working through some of those things and praying through it. And then there became a point where I just felt like I had to take a step of faith. You know, like take a step of faith. And that was the pastoral internship for me, was like take a step of faith and see, hey, throughout this time, do I feel more and more confirmed that this is the direction that God's leading me? Or it's like a no. And it's cool because in our context, it's not just me, right? Like the people in our church can affirm or deny like this work that God's doing too. So in the context of community, there's that community affirmation too, which I'm surprised by. Like people know me. And so I'm like, oh wow, if they think this is good too, then okay, maybe I'm not crazy, you know? And so that's kind of like the overall process.
I think just to add on in terms of like calling a community, this next question's reference your current like calling as the pastoral ministry in Detroit, right? This question is like, do you see this like long term, like even just like the rest of your life for that time thing, or even just yeah that direction right now? I know it's kind of cool right now. You know, it's only been like about a year, but you know, can you really see that? You know,
yeah. when I was in Ann Arbor, these are weird thoughts I have, but I was walking down the street one day in Ann Arbor, and I just felt like I don't think I'm gonna die here. You know, I'm just like, I don't think Ann Arbor is going to be where I'm going to be for the rest of my life. For Detroit, I think it's a little different. I'm just indefinitely there. Like, God, if I'm here for the rest of my life, then I'm going to be here. I'm going to be a Detroiter. Praise God. I'm down. If you call me elsewhere, I'm down. And so it's not, I have no idea, but I am indefinitely committed unless called otherwise. Yeah.
Thank you. I think we're just going to narrow down to these two last questions, and then we'll continue time of like prayer and worship afterwards. I think just a little bit more on the, I guess, referencing to the transcultural side actually of like different people groups. This individual asks, is there a place for LGBTQAT people in the church, and can God love them? I mean, how to love them as well?
So can you repeat it again?
Oh, sorry. Is there a place for LGBTQA people in the church, and can God love them? Or how can God love them?
Yeah, maybe I should give more than a yes or no. Mm-hmm. We have people in our current church community who identify as LGBTQA, is the last one, A. And I think it really, for me, I think these are just personal thoughts. Like, man, like when you're a Christian, that is your primary identity, right? Is that you might be a Christian who may identify as something as LGBTQA, but you are a Christian first. We all have these different things that we struggle with. And so I think it's pretty clear, I think biblically, like homosexuality is sinful. There's also a clear design for what God has called people to be, male or designed people to be, male or female. I think those things are pretty clear. I think we would also say it's pretty clear that everyone deviates from that in some way, shape, or form. And so for me, it's like, is there a place for LGBTQA people in the church? Like, is there a place for murderers and adulterers in the church? Is there a place for people like that in the church? Are there people who are greedy and selfish in the church? Yeah, this is a church of broken people who all need God. So I think that's there. I think like any other sin, there's got to be this desire to submit that to God and repent for it. I don't think we have murderers who continue murdering in the church. Like, we wouldn't say that's good. Like, oh yeah, oh, you are a murderer? Yeah, you can continue doing that and still be here. I don't think so. I think we're talking about allegiance to from an old kingdom to a new kingdom. That's for everyone. And so I think in that sense, yeah, you can be a part of that, but you cannot keep your old allegiance to this and then be here. And I think there's different challenges of navigating that as a Christian that are maybe more unique to LGBTQA, but I think those things are there. What was the second part of the question? Okay, can God love them? Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Amen.
God does love them. God, I think that's deeply there. You know, I think for all of us, there is brokenness in our lives that keep us from being who God originally designed us to be, right? God still deeply loves every single one of us. And so I think that's deeply there. But loving does not mean I get to do whatever I want, you know? I think loving does not mean that these things in my life, it's okay if they stay that way, you know? Or that those things define me more than God defines me. And so I would say that's kind of how I view it.
Thank you for sharing it. It's hard to, I guess... As Christians, where do we stand, like, doctrinally as a church, how we navigate, how do we love one another without being, like, compromising in the truth itself? Okay. I think this last question...
Okay, sorry, can I add something?
Yeah,
also,
go ahead.
I think it's understanding, I think sometimes this happens in the church, too, is, like, oh, yeah, like, just believe in God enough, and he's going to make you straight. And, like, I don't think necessarily that's the end goal, right? It's not like... God's goal is to make you straight. God's goal is not to make you married. God's goal is not to make you handsome. You know, like that's not the end goal, right? Like God is not just a means for what we're trying. But at the end of it is like, man, like we are all in our brokenness here that God may be glorified in the midst of that. And so I do think there is a danger of like sometimes we get into of like, hey, we're just gonna solve this problem you have. And now, yeah, so I think that's where it's challenging. But I think there is this call, like, yeah, like, how do we continue to grow and mature as Christians, leaving behind our flesh, and then experiencing more and more of the new life in Christ?
I think for this last question, it's basically like a space for encouragement for this, or not this individual, but even just a group of people. This individual asks, like, what advice do you have for people just getting into the Christian faith? I guess maybe it's like church, unchurched, or even just, you know, how many like early years as a believer, like what encouragement do you have for this individual or even individuals? It's really just, yeah.
Maybe my encouragement would be that God is really patient and God is really gracious. I think, you know, I'm not that old, obviously, but even as I get older, I'm just like amazed by how much patience there is. I'm personally not a very patient person, right? So I'm just thinking like, if I had to deal with myself for 29 years, I would just smite me. Like, why would you deal with all that, you know? But God, I think, is so patient and gracious. And I think that is an encouragement for all of us as we're getting on this journey. Like, dude or dudette, you're not going to get everything right. But God's gracious. God is committed to you. You know, I was thinking about that even yesterday when Pastor Ben was exhorting us at the end. Like, it is amazing. God is personally committed to you, personally committed to drawing you near to him, personally committed that you might know eternal joy and love and grace and mercy in him. Like, he's committed to you more than you might be committed to that process. I think that's really encouraging for me. Maybe what I would encourage them to do is to continue just to strive to get to know God more. Whether that's in the word, like even we briefly mentioned it yesterday, but like with our heart, so in our affections, getting to know God, in our mind, getting to know God, just even like how we live our life, getting to know God, I think that is what I would encourage them to do. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's give it up for Pastor Sam.
Yay. Thank you.
Actually, one sec. I actually had, before we time our worship, just as you came to bless us, we actually want to bless you as well. Obviously, we don't necessarily have like much to offer altogether, but is there any way that as a church, even right now in this moment, that we're able to, specific prayer requests to be praying for you in this moment?
I think personally, you can just pray for greater maturity. I'm not that mature. Yeah, I think there's so much for me to grow in my character, in my affections, in my desire. So I just pray that I continue to be more and more like Christ. I think I really need that. Specifically, yeah, in fighting the passions of my flesh or my desire to be awesome and amazing and just being able to channel that to making God known. So that would be a big one. This is really practical, that I would just be more disciplined in my seminary studies. I'm just like not a great student. I procrastinate on a lot of things. So if you could pray for that, that's just like a real life prayer request. I need help in being a good student in seminary. And then maybe just three, this is maybe the most important, is just being able to love our church well. You know, I think I'm not great at loving people. I don't know if this is true about all older siblings, but I'm pretty like bossy and demanding and self-centered. Most older siblings, I think, are really caring and loving and take care of their younger siblings. I'm like not like that. And so I think just growing in love for people, and that's why I serve them. That's why I shepherd them and minister to them. Those three things. Yeah, maturity, discipline, and love. Yeah, thanks.
All right, church. You heard it right there from him. If you don't feel too necessary, uncomfortable, let's just stretch out our hands towards Pastor Sam. I mean, just sharing those things in terms of, yeah, that maturity and growing, the disciplines, both the studies and the spiritual perhaps, and even just lastly, what it means to love people. Even just hearing that, yeah, it's humbling, you know, that as he's sharing this, that, you know, as he's learning, we're learning as well too. And so, yeah, let's just extend our hands once more. Just pray for a little bit, and after that, I'll close this out, and then we're in our time with worship.